Hey, gang. Welcome to the show, National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, where you can handle the truth. If you couldn't handle the truth, you wouldn't be listening to RBN. And if you want RBN to continue to help you handle the truth, please go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send shekels, send dollars, send lira, send yen, send renminbi, whatever. Just send it. Send wampum. Wampum, that's a good one. Maybe we can get Elizabeth Warren to send us some wampum. But today, there's a lot of things we could talk about. Everybody's talking about the migrant caravan. I want to talk about the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, that was signed by President Gorbachev of the Soviet Union and President Reagan of the United States in 1987. And perhaps William from Montana, if you're listening, maybe you could call in. But I will take callers. There's also, I'm always happy to talk to my callers. And because of my busy normie schedule, I haven't been able to take as many callers as I usually like to, but today is a call-in day. So that number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. Yes, I am a busy normie with a busy normie schedule, but this Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. This is a treaty that it actually came out of that famous Reykjavik summit. Was that in late 19? I know it was in the colder months because I remember riding around on a bicycle in cold weather and listening to these reports of President Gorbachev and President Reagan. It had to have been 86, maybe early 87. That's easy enough to check, Reykjavik summit. I will check that. But they had this summit meeting, probably rather hastily scheduled, in Reykjavik, Iceland, of all places. And they had Gorbachev had become the chairman of the Soviet Communist Party. He wasn't president initially. He was just the chairman of the party initially in 1985. But the chairman of the party was the leader of the country. He later assumed the role of president. But he had taken over, and he was much younger than Reagan. Reagan had gone through in the 4 years previous, had seen three of his Soviet counterparts die. So they were all aging and feeble. Of course, Reagan himself was of advanced age. He turned 70 not long after he became president. But his Soviet counterparts, and of course, Reagan was showing probably signs of the Alzheimer's disease that eventually overtook him. Within a couple of years of leaving the presidency, he left the public spotlight, and it was because of the Alzheimer's. But at any rate, the Soviet leaders had been even more sickly and decrepit than Reagan. And then all of a sudden, Gorbachev came along, and Gorbachev was, photogenic and sociable and well-liked. He was well-liked in Europe. Margaret Thatcher liked him. The regular people liked him. He was popular, and he started becoming popular in the United States. Had an attractive wife, not a trophy wife, but someone his own age, but somebody who was attractive and kind of broke the mold. You never saw Mrs. Brezhnev, and I guess you did see Mrs. Khrushchev, and she just looked like a squat babushka. But so they developed a relationship, and they started to trust each other. And they went to Reykjavik, met for a few hours without their aides. So on Gorbachev, on Reagan's side, those aides would be Secretary of State George Shultz, Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger. I'm not sure who his national security advisor was at that point. It could have been Poindexter. But at any rate, they went into a room without their aides, just with the translators, and emerged some hours later announcing that they were going to abolish nuclear weapons, which I remember riding around on my bike listening to this on AM radio with an old earphone. That was about as mobile as you could get back then, and thinking, wow, I was pretty excited. I couldn't really imagine it actually happening, but it sounded pretty exciting. At any rate, after Shultz and Weinberger, and maybe on the Soviet side, perhaps Edward Shevardnadze or some others. I don't know who. There was a Ustinov was in the. I think Ustinov was in the Politburo. They had others in who probably were trying to restrain Gorbachev as well. They dialed it back, and it wound up becoming not a ban on all nuclear weapons, but a ban on what was seen as the most dangerous class of nuclear weapons. These land-based intermediate-range missiles, land-based. Of course, you know, we have submarine-based weapons, we have air-based weapons, but these land-based weapons, and they were deployed in Europe. There were the Pershing missiles, which were had faced a great deal of opposition from the European public when they were deployed there, because they made Europe into a target. And especially, you know, people around the world have been indoctrinated into fearing and loathing Trump. It wasn't quite as severe with Ronald Reagan, but there was a certain amount of fear and loathing of Ronald Reagan in Europe. It wasn't as popular in Europe as he was in the United States. He won, you know, 49 state re-election victory in 1984. He was never that popular in Europe, but although, you know, his legacy in retrospect, maybe he is more popular in Europe because of things like this intermediate range nuclear forces treaty. It was dangerous because from time to time you have false alarms go off in the militaries, the nuclear forces of the respective countries. You have had false alarms where they think, has the other side launched weapons? And then they go into these emergency verification protocols. And so we have had cases where they think the other side has launched weapons, and then they're able to verify that, no, they haven't. Because, you know, it takes, what does it take, 20 minutes or so for an intercontinental missile to go through, you know, its semi-orbit of the Earth and hit the other side of the world? That's not the case with the intermediate range missiles. These intermediate range missiles, the American missiles were deployed in Europe. They were deployed in places like Britain and Germany. To strike at their Soviet targets would only take a few minutes, meaning that a false alarm, there wouldn't be time to verify whether it's a false alarm or not. So if you get that alarm, you have to make that instantaneous decision. Are you going to launch your missiles and nuke the other side? That's what made them so dangerous. And so they were banned. Now, what we have this week is John Bolton and President Trump has said he's announced his intention to withdraw from this treaty, citing cheating by the Russians. They're cheating. And also, you know, China was never part of the treaty. And China was much more of a technological backwater at the time. And they weren't part of this. Well, but cheating by the Russians. That's the first thing I want to address, is this notion of cheating by the Russians. Because, you know, what had happened? What was the environment of the signing of the treaty? And what's happened since then? So the Russians are accused of cheating on this treaty because of certain developments, and you know, weapons developing and testing that has occurred. Well, what's gone on? And there are people who know more about this than I do, for sure. But one thing that happened since 1987 was in 2002, President George W. Bush, the second Bush, unilaterally withdrew from the ABM treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which had been signed in 1972 by Richard Nixon and Leonid Brezhnev, the longtime Soviet ruler. And that had banned missile defense systems, nuclear weapons, missile defense systems, although it did allow for each side to have one area that they protected with missile defense. But that's all that it allowed for. The Russians decided that they would protect Moscow, and the Americans decided that they were going to protect one of their missile silos in order to make sure that they would have a a second strike capability in case of a Soviet first strike. But everything else was banned. Missile defense systems were banned. So one thing was, when President George W. Bush withdrew from this treaty in order to allow for the development of missile defense. And this is something that's, you know, it's been developed. They've shared a lot with Israel. Surprise, surprise, the Iron Dome, which is American technology. So they went forward with all this missile defense. Well, one way of in order to counter missile defense, which you know, at the time the 1987 treaty had been signed, was not allowed. But now, in order to counter missile defense, the Soviets or the Russians developed some new weaponry, which perhaps was in violation of the treaty. What else? Of course, you also had the long before then, you had President Clinton, who was, Bush's father had agreed the end of 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell, when President Gorbachev signaled that he would allow what had been the Eastern European satellites to go their own way without interference. As you remember, that during the Cold War, Hungary in 1956, Czechoslovakia in 1968 were both invaded when their governments seemed to be going their own way. Poland was under the threat of invasion in 1980 when, you know, the Solidarity Labor Union was shaking up its political system. And so rather than face an invasion from other Warsaw Pact countries, Warsaw Pact being the Soviets' military bloc, the leader of Poland declared martial law. But so you had that. But here, by the end of the 1980s, President Gorbachev signaled that he would let the countries go their own way, even if it meant leaving the Warsaw Pact, even if, you know, he would let them go their own way. And they went their own way. And East Germany, the East German Communist Party relinquished power, and East Germany sought reunification with West Germany. Well, the thing is, West Germany was a NATO country. East Germany had been a Warsaw Bloc country, and could the Soviet leadership, could they allow one of their allies to then join, to unify with West Germany and stay part of NATO, this military bloc that whose purpose of existence was to organize military defense or attack, however you want to look at it, against the Soviet Union. It was an anti-Soviet military bloc. And so the promise was made that, yes, we'll, President Gorbachev will allow for East Germany to join West Germany, the unified Germany stays in NATO, but in exchange, NATO will not expand one inch to the east. That was the explicit agreement, and there's all sorts of documentation about it now. Unfortunately, it wasn't written as a treaty, but that was scrapped by President Clinton and all of his successors in moving NATO all the way to the Russian border. So there's that. And then also, you've got other types of missiles that are being developed by the United States, as, for instance, as part of the missile defense system. You've got this missile defense system uses anti-missile technology. Well, these anti-missile missiles are effectively intermediate range land-based missile systems. So we have been developing these very things just under a different name, under the name of missile defense, but it's really the same technology. So we've been violating it all along. And then, of course, you've got these Aegis missiles, which are on boats, but they are effectively land-based missiles that are being deployed on the sea. So, you know, we've been much more in violation of the spirit and the letter of the INF Treaty than the Russians. We have been. And, you know, the Russians can look at us, and of course, then you've got this whole list of agreements that we're walking out on, and I'm sure William from Montana, when he does call in, whether it's today or another day, is going to be able to tell us about the conversation in Russia, where the Russians are saying Putin's too soft on America, that the Americans can't be trusted. We walk out of every agreement we ever signed. We've walked out of the ABM treaty, walking out on the INF treaty, where we walked out on the Iran nuclear treaty. We walked out on the climate change treaty, which, you know, whatever. And more. You know, we've gone back on the agreement not to move NATO, that we can't be trusted. Okay, we have Wayne from West Virginia. There's hardly any time, but I'll bring you on right now just to say hi. And then, well, actually, there's not time. But we'll bring you on right after the break. And we're just about to go to break. And we'll be back with Wayne from West Virginia.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Radio, where would you get this information if it wasn't on RBN? So take that last advertisement, that last appeal for funds to heart. You wouldn't be hearing me talk about these things if it wasn't for RBN. So if you like this information, please donate. Wayne from West Virginia. Wayne, how are you? Wayne?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you fine now.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Wayne?
Okay, the only reason, two things I want to talk about. One of them is the only reason we don't have better relations with Russia because of the Jewish control here in America.
Oh, no, you know, no, not... the Jews are good. No, they wouldn't do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
I know. Yeah. But... they don't like Putin, so, you know, we're not supposed to like Putin.
Right.
So that's the problem right there. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick is that, tell you a little tale, what happened is in Germany, the Hitler sent a boatload of Jews to Cuba back in the late 30s, and he had good relations with Cuba, and he sent this boatload on a St. Michael's or St. Mary's ship. And at the same time, he told Cuba not to accept him, which Cuba didn't accept him. And he said, let America accept him. Roosevelt's running for office, and he was also working with the conservatives over here. But anyway, he said, Roosevelt's running for office. And if he accepts him, then... we'll just send another 20 boatloads over, and America's having a depression, and that'll hurt Roosevelt's election coming up, because the American people will be saying, you know, here's Roosevelt accepting all these Jews, and we don't have jobs, and he's taking all these aliens in, and it could cost him the election. Well, Roosevelt didn't accept him either. I think he talked either Belgium or Holland into taking them. And, of course, as soon as Hitler took over Holland and Belgium several years later, there he had them again. But does this sound familiar of what's happening now?
Mm-hmm.
Here's where Trump's at. If Trump doesn't accept this caravan, then he's a bad person. He's has no compassion. He's turning these kids away, blah, 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 blah. And if he takes them in, then his followers sort of start melting away because, you know, he's not doing anything. They're still here. The last caravan, they're still here. So why should I worry about Trump? So it's a win-win for the Democrats. So I think that's what's taking place. And we, as far as a wall goes, what we really need is gun towers and save lives. If you put the gun towers up and you start knocking off a few coming across the border, it'll stop real soon, and you won't have any skeletons in the desert anymore. You won't have the rapes. You won't have the human trafficking. You won't have the drugs. You won't have the overdoses of people dying here in this country, and it'll stop real damn quick.
Yeah, so, and what you say, it's absolutely true. If you had if you shot a small number of people, they would get the message. They would stop coming. There wouldn't be people dying in the desert. You wouldn't have you know, the rapes along the way or the rapes after they get here of Americans. Everything you say is absolutely true. And yet, can you imagine American border guards shooting at people trying to come? Can you actually imagine it?
Oh, if they're given, put the military there and give them orders. Anybody crosses that line, you know, and you put signs up, you know, in Spanish and English and say, you know, cross this line and you're going to be shot dead. And
those, yeah. You know, those five people who get shot dead or, you know, small handful of people get shot dead before, before the rest of the people get the message, and they would get the message, those people will be as household name as you know, Trayvon Martin or Michael Brown. Everybody will know their name. You know, what you say is absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with what you say. It's absolutely right. It would be, you'd have much less suffering and loss of life were something like that to happen. But, you know, again, I just ask, is it even imaginable?
Well, if you have the right leadership and the right people running the show, you know, as far as, you know, I know what you're talking about. Here's the Democrats screaming the blues, you know. Well, lock their ass up, you know.
Yeah.
But they're at, you know, in one of these camps.
So one of my colleagues said that they think what's going on now is trying to force Trump into a Kent State situation where American troops do shoot at people and you do get your Michael Brown and your Trayvon Martin poster childs. Who? Okay. Well, you want to hang on and talk on the other side of the break?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just two bottles, a four-month supply. I take Extendivite three times a day, every day. I think the supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Is he still with us?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Hear me all right? You hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you just... Okay, good.
Good. Okay, here's where we're at. Let the numbers speak for themselves. If we have 200 dead migrants along the borders versus X amount of numbers of overdoses, X amount of skeletons in the desert, X amount of rapes, X amount of murders by aliens in the United States. You know, the numbers speak for themselves. And when it comes to these left-wingers like Pelosi and Schumer and Pocahontas and George Soros, you know, these people need to be incarcerated because they are a danger to themselves and others for what they're doing. So... you know, right there, we don't need them kind of people around anyway. So, and they need, I don't know whether you can rehabilitate them or not. They're probably too damn old for that. But, you know, let the facts speak for themselves of what's going on. And then, you know, let the American people, you know, decide, period. And we need to end all this crazy rigmarole and bull crap that's going on in our country. Because it's not our country anymore. You know, that's my...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's... they think it's not our country anymore. We don't run it anymore. I would still assert that it's our that it's our country. And, you know, we're in the process of taking it back. And hopefully we'll be successful in that. Regarding the deaths crossing the border and, you know, the possibility of using deadly force to prevent it. You look at the border, we don't exactly know how many people are dying crossing the southern border through the desert, for instance. We don't know. What we do know, I think we have better data on crossing the Mediterranean into Europe. And it's at least a few percent of the people who attempt the crossing die. It's at least a few percent. So they get, you know, thousands of people who die and, you know, hundreds of thousands who get in. But it's a few percent. The odds are better than Russian roulette, but not a whole lot better than Russian roulette. So here's the thing. People are willing to risk their lives, even, you know, in the face of maybe a 3 or 4% chance of death. They're willing to take that risk to get in if there's a 97% chance that they are going to get in, right? So there's people who are taking that risk, at least coming from Africa. Now, Africa is probably, you know, it's a lot worse place, and, you know, the motivation for escaping from Africa would probably be higher than from Central America. But the people are willing to risk their lives as long as there is a very good chance that they're going to get across. So the main thing, I mean, you could shoot some people at the border, but if people are still getting across, that itself wouldn't be the deterrent. But if people aren't going to get across, if it's futile trying to get across, and it's made futile via whatever means, and the means that you're suggesting and the means that would probably be the most effective would be like a certainty that deadly force would be used against you, then people would stop coming. And I think that was with the Berlin Wall. Some people got across it, but there was the chances of getting shot. I mean, they were high enough that people just weren't gonna try it. And
well, there's people that are willing to risk their lives to rob a bank.
Yeah,
what happened? You know, so you know that's their choice, not anyone else's. So you know, why should we be worrying about, you know, if you make a choice to risk your life, then risk your life is at risk. Simple as that. You know, that's my feeling, because you know, and do I have compassion for these people? Well, sure I do. But then you turn around, you know, here we're going to stop giving these countries money, but we're broke. Why should we be giving them money in the first place? You know, it's like you're broke, and I come to you and say, hey, I know you're broke, but your credit's pretty good, so I want you to borrow $50,000 and give to Wayne in West Virginia because he needs it. Now, he'll never have to pay you back, but he needs it. I mean, this is the insanity that's going on every day. So we need to stop it. Or we need to just throw our hands up and say, you know, come on in. You know, take over.
Which is what Nancy Pelosi and you know, the establishment, not just the Democrats, I mean, really, the John McCain people, they might not have wanted to be as obvious about it, but yeah, that was basically the status quo before President Trump came along, and we'll see if he has any success, but that was certainly the direction we were moving in.
Well, I think Trump's biggest problem, he needs some strong leadership around him that'll power through with these things and, you know, take care of it and not worry about what, let's not kid ourselves. Why should we be worrying about what Nancy might think or Nancy say? You know, the hell with Nancy. Like I say, Nancy's a danger to herself and others.
I was just going to say that President Trump's in a little bit better situation here than in the foreign policy. In the foreign policy, I can't think of a single person in his foreign policy team who really shares his objectives. With the, you can fault Jeff Sessions all you want for having recused himself from the Russia hoax investigation and whatnot, but at least you've got a few people, you know, Jeff Sessions and the speechwriter, Stephen Miller, who's Jewish, but he's very anti-immigration. You've got at least a few people in the administration who do share President Trump's objectives regarding immigration. So we'll just have to see what happens. And what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks before the midterm elections is going to be very, very telling. And if these people reach the border before the midterms, it means they came by bus. I mean, you know, there's no way that they could come by foot. And I posted a picture of them in the bus on davidduke.com just an hour ago. I mean, they're coming
George
by bus.
Versus the Express.
Excuse me?
George
the George Soros
Express.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a, you know, the George Soros coach lines, the van lines, Greyhound bus by George Soros. Well, thank you so
Unless
much for
you guys
calling. Have anything else to say?
I'll let you go.
Okay.
We'll
thank you so much. Okay.
Bye, buddy.
And bye-bye. Have a nice day. And then next, we'll go to Jeremy from Kentucky. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Slattery. Sometimes I call in with some well-thought-out points, and sometimes I just straight-up have questions, and so this is a question day, and maybe mm-hmm. we can discover the answer. And if William gets on the line, let me know, because I want to hear what he has to say. I want to let him on. But regarding this Russia thing and the backing of the treaty, so as we've discussed a lot of times before, there seems to be this effort to keep Russia from allying with the European powers, specifically Germany. I think that that's when you were talking about the Berlin Wall. You know, you had Russia controlling the East, but the West didn't want them to have full control of Germany. There seems to be, you know, this effort to want to stop that. And then as we discussed the geopolitics of Dugin, with William on the alternative media, you know, William brought this up as well, that's one thing that the Dugin crowd seeks to do is to try to make that natural, you know, land alliance. And now let's go forward and consider some things that Trump has done. He did criticize Merkel for dealing with Russia as far as oil. Is that? And did I get that correct? It was some sort of fuel, right?
Yeah,
and I would assume
oil and gas.
Oil and gas, yeah. And so, again, here's an effort for that to keep any kind of an alliance there, even if it's one of business like that, of one purchasing from the other. So how, in light of all of this, how should we view this deal with Trump, you know, backing out of the treaty? Maybe is he taking a page out of his normal foreign policy book where he does something extreme that makes us think that he's going to agitate the other nation so that he can come in then and play nice guy without getting mm-hmm. flat? Are we doing that, which would be total 4D chess, but go ahead.
Well, that's what I wonder, and that's what I was wondering about North Korea, and I don't know if I was right about it or not. I had thought he was not trying, it wasn't that he was trying to scare Kim Jong-un into thinking that he was going to start a war with North Korea. I thought he was trying to scare the media and the foreign policy establishment into thinking that he was going to start a war with North Korea so that they would not prevent him from negotiating, because the negotiations would be preferable to the war. I don't know if that's actually, I mean, that might have been what happened. Or maybe President Trump did think he was scaring the North Koreans. The North Koreans are always scared. They're always paranoid. So I don't really think that was the case from the North Korean point of view. But I don't know what President Trump thought he was doing. So here, what I wonder is, you know, because of the whole Russia hoax stuff in particular, it's been impossible for him to develop a relationship with Vladimir Putin. And Putin is his number one potential ally. His best political ally would be Vladimir Putin. If he could, you know, have foreign policy successes together with Putin, in cooperation with Putin, it would help him so much domestically, you know, because it would raise his popularity here. It would be very helpful domestically. So what I wonder is, is he doing this in effect? Kind of, it's kind of a form of saber rattling, a diplomatic saber rattling. Is he doing this so that he's going to be able to talk more to Vladimir Putin? Now they do have there. What is it? There's the 100th anniversary of, is it the Treaty of Versailles that ended, or the maybe the armistice that ended World War? I guess the treaty came later, but the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, which is coming up, I believe, November 11th. And is it the are the events going to be in Paris, or there's somewhere over in Europe? Maybe it's in Brussels. And so Trump and Putin will both be there, and it's been announced that they will meet. Now, meeting on the sidelines of an event and having a full-blown summit aren't the same thing, but still they'll meet then. And then I think there is a G20 meeting in Argentina not in the not-too-distant future. So they have a couple of opportunities to meet. And so who knows what's going to happen? The question, because a lot of people who have been anti-Russia, who even Republicans who have been anti-Russia, who have gone along with the whole Russia hoax, who have been more or less never Trumpers, you know, Bob Corker, who's going to be out of the Senate, but he's one of them. A lot of these people are alarmed at the prospect of dismantling the the nuclear treaties like the INF. And then there's also this President Reagan and President Gorbachev also signed a START treaty. It was a strategic arms reduction talks was what START was an acronym for. And so there are never Trumpers and Republicans who nonetheless support the body of treaties, arms control treaties with Russia. And even though they were willing to go along with the Russia hoax for anti-Trump political purposes, they may well be willing to take their foot off the accelerator if it's a question between Trump dismantling these treaties and getting us closer to, you know, into a much more dangerous relation with Russia. Now, and I'm sorry to go on for so long, but the hardcore Zionists, they're all for having, playing chicken with Russia. But some of the other groups of people, especially within the Republican Party, they were perhaps more motivated just by anti-Trump animus, but don't really want to go to war with Russia. I don't know. Maybe I'm all confused. What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, a good way to see what our enemies think and to kind of glean is to just check out the headlines. CNN, I mean, all of the headlines on this is painting Trump as wanting to go back into an arms race and being an agitator towards these other foreign countries. So here, very interestingly, on a CNN article, Marianne Hansen, I think I pronounced her name correctly, she actually said, instead of winding up the rhetoric and threatening retaliatory measures, both Moscow and Washington need to engage in diplomacy and confidence-building measures, together with gradual phased balance and monitored reduction in their weapons, she added. So, I mean, he's already got people now in the press are telling him to go talk to Russia, and maybe that was the desired outcome. Maybe we're reading too much into this.
This is exactly what Trump said he wanted to do in the first place. He from the beginning of his administration, said he wanted arms control reductions, or arms control talks. That's what he wanted.
Yeah, and if he would have just went and engaged Putin right off the bat, you know, the Russian collusion crowd would just, you know, have a conniption fit. But now they're actually telling him to go do this, to go engage diplomatically. So, I mean, who knows? You know, when I think of 4D chess, I think of Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty. And, you know, each one is out trying to outthink the other by 16 to 20 steps. And it's just, you can't hardly predict anything.
All right, Jeremy. Well, thank you for your call. And I'll be right back after the break.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell five.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Nathan from New Hampshire. Nathan, welcome to the show. Are you there, Nathan?
I was just curious. You must be familiar with the antiwar.com.
Yes.
That's definitely a good resource for people. It's more of a libertarian type thing, but if you're interested in like foreign policy stuff, which you talk mm-hmm. about a lot, mm-hmm. That's a great resource for people. And I was kind of curious about, you know, the best way to contact you. There was an article there, a podcast that I wanted to share with you with a guy named Sheldon Richman, who's one of these libertarians. He did an episode on Benedict Spinoza. You heard of him, Baruch Spinoza?
Yes.
He was this European Jew who was all, you know, Jews love to celebrate him as part of the Enlightenment. And
yeah.
I was listening to the show about halfway through, he mentioned... David Duke's people, blah, blah, blah. They're trying to, you know, conflate Zionism with Judaism and blah, blah, blah. And it just sounded so much like what you always say about the clever versus the crazy. And it was such a perfect example of the clever to me.
Uh-huh. Okay. You can go to, let's see, nationalbugle.com. If I don't have the contact me page, if it's not down, I'll get it up shortly.
Okay.
So, if you want to share anything with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So this was... you do have that type of thing. The Spinoza, you know, that period of European history, it's not my strongest point, but they do like to build up Spinoza as being, you know, one of the leaders of the Enlightenment. And from what I can tell, really, he doesn't have a whole lot to say to anybody other than Jews. What was your reading?
That's not really my whole thing either, but, you know, I think probably the Enlightenment is part of the problems that we have today. So I don't know about celebrating somebody because he was part of the Enlightenment. How great, you know, how wonderful that makes somebody.
Well, you know, we had the Enlightenment was more of a philosophical movement. It was contemporaneous with a lot of scientific discoveries. Whether it was necessary for them or not is a completely different issue.
Yeah, I think that's just, you know, you're definitely right about the scientific advancements, but then people, you know, kind of came to that, well, we can perfect man, you know, as we're understanding science, and we can put aside, you know, all our old beliefs, and now we can come up with, they came up with all these crazy new ideas about, you know, how everybody's equal and this and that, and I think, you know, that's kind of where we're at today with this whole ideology of equality.
Yeah, did you see Mark Carlett's video on equality? I mean, there's one thing to say equality of opportunity or equality under the law, but to act as if two people are equal in all of their inherent characteristics, or that groups of people would have the same distribution of characteristics is, you know, it's patently false. You can just see it with your own eyes.
Of course, yeah, if we had actual just equality before the law and an understanding that people aren't equal and they're going to be different outcomes, that would be a different thing, but that isn't what we have now. Yeah. Now we need equality of outcomes. Sounds like we're running up to the end of the show, so I'll let you go.
Okay, thank you very much. So remember, this is our funding drive at RBN, so go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send shekels, and I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus? For a one-time donation to RBN of only $500, it is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.